So I love the story of Bartimaeus. I know it's short, but if we take some time and just slow it down, there's really a lot here. So in the story, Jesus is leaving the city of Jericho with his disciples and a huge crowd, which tells us that in this town anyway, he's a minor celebrity, right? People not always happy to see Jesus. Here they were clearly really happy to see Jesus. And then there's Bartimaeus, described as a blind man begging on the side of the road outside the gate. And these two words, blind and beggar, they tell us about Bartimaeus' place in the community. He is poor, and because back then they believed that people who were blind, that would have been a result of sin. We know this is not true now, but they thought this. So he would have been deemed faulty, not right, not normal. So Bartimaeus is used to living on the margins. And when you sit right outside the gate and you're considered invisible, you get to hear a lot of things. People talk, they ignore you, and you get to hear what's going on. So Bartimaeus had already heard about Jesus, right? He'd formed an opinion of this man. He'd figured out that this guy, Jesus, actually cared about people like him, and that Jesus was someone with some power. So when he hears Jesus passing by, he starts shouting, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And I wonder, does he even think before these words come out of his mouth? Does he pause to wonder how he'll be received? Does it take a lot of courage for him to shout out to be seen, or is it an act of desperation? Does it just spring out of him? We don't know. We just know that whatever doubts he might have had that day, they don't stop him from crying out to be seen, to matter. And we shouldn't be surprised that the crowd around him orders him to keep quiet. They tell him to shut up, but he doesn't listen. He yells all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And so I imagine some in this crowd, the people who have no doubt that they have a right to be there, I imagine them getting more and more annoyed as Bartimaeus is yelling, because his shouting is ruining their experience, right? And I imagine others in that crowd, those who are also marginalized in some way, the women, people in poverty, others who've learned that they need to stay small and not be seen. I imagine that those people are getting really anxious right now, because we know even today what happens, right? When people on the margins speak up. It's not always a safe thing. Bartimaeus is breaking the rules. He's demanding to be seen, to be acknowledged. So can you feel the tension in the story? Is somebody going to shut this guy up or what? And then the scriptures tell us that Jesus stopped. Another translation says, Jesus was still. And in the stillness, Jesus calls for Bartimaeus, this man at the bottom of the social order. And isn't it interesting that all of a sudden, the crowd changes their tune? The man who should stay invisible is suddenly worthy of recognition. And instead of shutting him down, they encourage him to get up and go to Jesus. And I love this next part, because when Bartimaeus stands before Jesus, Jesus doesn't assume that he knows what the blind man wants. He asks him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And this is hard. I don't know about for you, but this is hard for me because I want to rush in and fix things. I get a read on the situation. I think I know what needs to happen, and I just want to get it done. But Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus empowers Bartimaeus to define his own need and his own solution. And I think this story is a great metaphor for what happens in Spiritus Christi's mental health center. So many people who call us are at the end of their ropes. For whatever reason, depression, anxiety, trauma, grief, poverty, they are usually feeling some degree of being lost, unseen, out of options. And like Bartimaeus, something gets them to make that first call. It might be desperation. It might be the encouragement of a loved one. It might be just some small part deep down inside them that knows that they're worth something better. Like a guy I'm going to call James for this morning, who got connected with our mental health center earlier this year. Underemployed and cooped up in his apartment, James had become increasingly more depressed and anxious as the pandemic just continued to wear on. He was struggling to get out of bed, and he was thinking about ending his life. So his partner called, saying that James was resistant to counseling because he had no insurance, and he felt guilty enough already about being a drain on the household income. And he didn't want his partner to also have to pay for his mental health care. But our services are free, and James agreed to come in just for a first meeting, just to talk. And together in that meeting, we were able to come up with a shared understanding of what he was experiencing, what he wanted to change, and what he could expect from therapy. He was anxious and uncertain as he left that day, but he was willing to give it a try. Soon after that, in a session with his therapist, James shared that he had always wondered why he had many of the symptoms of PTSD, even though, in his words, he'd never experienced anything traumatic. And in counseling, he learned that the symptoms he was exhibiting are common in people who experience the kind of abuse and trauma and poverty that he grew up in. After several sessions, James came to therapy one day with a big smile on his face. And I've lost my place on my page. One moment, please. He was excited to share how his new strategies to deal with anxiety and strong emotions were making a difference in his life. And he confessed that day, "I didn't want to get counseling because I didn't want to find out there was one more thing wrong with me. But now I know I can do something about my problems." So James was, in a sense, blind, and now he can see. He thought he was the problem, and now he realizes that the problem is very much separate from him. He thought he was powerless, and now he's catching these small glimpses of just how powerful he really is. So I'm going to back up just a bit and tell you a bit about the Mental Health Center for those of you who don't know who we are and what we do. So we are located on the third floor of the church building on Fitzhugh Street. And that's our home base, but we spill over into all sorts of spaces when needed for counseling sessions or group sessions. And Mark Potter and I are the two paid staff at the center. As director, I do a lot of things, but for today's purposes, I'll say providing counseling to clients, supporting our volunteers, and I help those who call to get set up either with someone at the center if they are eligible for our services, or I help them to connect to other places in the community. And to be honest, sometimes they just need 15 minutes to be heard, and then they're fine, and that's all they really needed. They've got their answer because they had space and it just wells up from them. We really are brilliant people. We really, really are our own solutions oftentimes. And so that's kind of what I do. And Mark Potter takes care of our fundraising and our grant writing and our administrative tasks, all the things that keeps us running. And his steady, compassionate voice is often the first one people hear when they call. The bulk of our work is done by a team of volunteer licensed professionals and one counseling intern from St. John Fisher, who provide individual couples and group psychotherapy to those who are uninsured or underinsured. And we have three peer advocates who hold a supportive space for folks in our weekly living room peer support meeting that happens in the Nielsen Room, again, at Fitzhugh Street. And thanks to a partnership with a yoga instructor in our parish, we're also able to provide yoga classes free of charge. And then there are a whole host of other volunteers, attorneys, consultants, advocates, and everyone who helps with our fundraiser. Bless you. And these volunteers, and all of you, because let's face it, it doesn't happen without all of you, we make it possible. And it's all functioning a little bit like Jesus in the story that we heard today. Because like Jesus, we stop, we become still enough to see people who don't feel seen, still enough to hear people who often don't feel heard, and we ask people in distress, how can we help? What do you want for your life, and how can we support you in making that happen? We help people see the way forward, and then we support them on that journey. And like Jesus, we do not charge for our services. We believe cost should never be a barrier to getting help. So I will say it again. All of you play a crucial role in making this healing work possible. We get calls regularly from people that you have referred to us. Thank you. These are people you have stopped to see, people you have stopped to hear. And you share so much in so many ways. Your generosity really just overwhelms me sometimes. You share of your financial resources, your prayers, your time, your expertise, your extra dishes and microwaves and everything. You just share and share and share. And that has allowed us to serve over 200 people this last year through the pandemic. So thank you. Thank you for your investment in the lives of the people who consult us. And thank you for the opportunity to serve Jesus with you.